cross, and it was Bale. Oh, what about that? But Gerrard! You beauty!
I think it's all over. It is now.
Guys, told you we'd be back. It's episode 13, part two of this mid-season review. I'm going to kick it off straight away with Manchester City. So, as we record this, they're sat in third after spending £150 million in the summer on the likes of Rodri and Yao Cancelo. I think that Rodri's worked out pretty well. He's been really solid in the midfield for them. Won a lot of his aerial duels, provided some nice height in midfield, which they've been lacking for years after Yaya Toure. Cancelo has really struggled to bed in. That's quite an issue as well. He's been utilised at left back. It seemed like he might take Kyle Walker's position, and then Walker might drop into centre back like he did for England years back. But he hasn't found great form, and left back's been a major issue for them, in my opinion, this year. Angelino came back after they had that clause in his contract at PSV. He has been exploited massively in that 3-1 away defeat to Liverpool in particular. He was ripped to shreds. And then Mendy, he just can't mend himself effectively. You know, he's always out of injuries, riddled with them. And obviously City were trying to get, win back-to-back-to-back titles. Would have been the first team to do so, I believe. And they started off perfectly with the Community Shield win against Liverpool. Kicked off the season nicely. And then they scored 14 goals in four games in the league, which is, pretty standard for City, but that's more than three goals a game, which is impressive by all means. And defeats away at Norwich, I think that was a real sort of turning point. Pukki just coming to the fore in that one. We'll talk about him, I'm sure, shortly. And then I think the Wolves game was probably more impactful. Adama Traore getting in twice behind that gaping defence. And you kind of see Fernandinho, for how good he is and how good he's been for City, he's just not as comfortable in centre-back. He can fill it in against a less dangerous side, say in the Champions League. But when he's got those sort of forces like Adama Traore running at him, or if it was a Heung-Min Son, that's when he'll struggle. They have had some key injuries, such as Aymeric Laporte and John Stones. But the money that they're spending, another £150 million in the summer, you should equip yourself properly. And I don't think they've been able to replace Kompany, and that's been the main issue for me. So Pep's obviously stuck with 4-3-3. He's always used that at, Barcelona, Bayern Munich as well, and then now at City. But as I say, injuries have caused for rotation, and he's kind of fluctuated between who he has in that midfield three and in the front three as well. Last year, Bernardo Silva was a mainstay in central midfield, became probably the best central midfielders, one of the best anyway, in the league. He's drifted more out wide now, but Mahrez has been impressive, I think. He's taken a while to bed in at City, his second season, but I think he's been really impressive. And City, we know how good they are at pinning teams into their own half. They've been good at that for years, but as I say, Wolves, for example, exploited that with playing a long ball over the top, Adama's in, and that's two goals. And then, because we're not used to City dropping that many points in the last couple of seasons, when they do, it really gives Liverpool a massive boost as well. And it knocks the stuffing out of City, already a depleted squad with injuries. But the main people who have been involved in goals have been Aguero and Sterling on 9 in the Premier League. And for assists, it's been De Bruyne, who has actually missed a few games. He's got 9, and David Silva has got 6 assists. So your standard players, really. We're kind of used to it. My key players for them, I think you've got to have Sterling. Constantly drawing fouls, getting goals for City, and sometimes single-handedly dragging that City side, especially in the Champions League, to victory. Rodri, I think, has really been impressive for them as well. He's helped with the issues in defence. I think if they hadn't signed him or somebody as good as him, that defence would have been exploited a lot more as well. He's slotted into Fernandinho's usual position really well. He's top for passes for the club with 1,047, tackles with 30, and aerial duels won with 35, which I mentioned on the previous episode. And De Bruyne, when he's come back in, some of the goals he scored and the mobility that he brings to that City side is unreal, because David Silva's never been blessed with mobility. Rodri's not the most mobile either. So De Bruyne has to be third, in my opinion. I think Edison's kind of gone off the boil.
It's definitely the defence which is letting them down. They've, as you said, lost 4, drawn 2, which is the exact same amount of games they'd lost and drawn at the end of last season. And they've conceded 19, which is, I think, 4 or 5 less than they'd conceded after a whole season last year. So you can tell that, as you said, the missing company, missing that leader at the back who can organise his defence and can read the game well, they just don't seem to have found a replacement for that.
And if I had to go on to the player to sign, it would be a centre-back, Joe. As you say, never replace company. That should have been their main priority in the summer if they wanted to, you know, get that third league title in a row. And I don't want it to kind of be like your career mode where you think, oh, who are the best players? And because City have unlimited funds, you know, I'll just go for them. But I've seriously looked at Milan Skriniar. So they've been linked to him for a while. Really good reader of the game. Well, you know, well oiled on the ball as well. And he's actually kind of leading that defence. And that's quite, you know, with Diego Godin in there, who's a born leader, say that Skriniar is taking it by the scruff of the neck and dragging that inside to a challenging Juve at the top of Serie A. He's definitely somebody I'd be looking at, but I think he'd cost well in excess of 80 million. And somebody who I think would probably cost about half of that because of his recent fall-ins out at Barcelona is Samuel Umtiti. So he's not as big as Skriniar. He's about 5'11", 6', but for how small he is, he makes up with it, his athleticism and also how good in the air he is as well. Really good read of the game, and I think he's been unfairly frozen out of this Barcelona side. So that's probably the more affordable option, and I think it's a realistic option.
Yeah, just to finish on City there, I don't think I've ever seen a team so exciting and devastating in attack be so susceptible to counter-attacks. And obviously, the iconic Pep Guardiola Barcelona team always... And that is how you would undo them, was on the counter. But I mean, the games against Wolves with Adama Traore's pace of, with the long balls, and then the game against Man United, who I'm about to come on to, the counter attacking was just completely devastating, and they just had no answers. Every time the ball went forward into their box, they were just getting absolutely destroyed.
Yeah, it's concerning for City, but they've got to hope that they can bring somebody in. It's really difficult because sides are going to be asking for a lot of money for their assets as well. You know, if you went to a Leicester and said we want Soyuncu, they'd be asking for way more than 50 million. And City were in the race for him when he did sign for Leicester as well from Freiburg. So they've lost out there, really. I'd probably say they're going to finish second. I think if they can get that defensive stalwart in January, I think that they'll probably edge Leicester by something like 2 to 5 points, maybe. I don't really think that's any doing any discredit, you know, to Leicester, because it's difficult to sustain those numbers that they're putting up, and City have just got that deep, deep squad, and I'd go second for City.
I think they might finish fourth, personally. I think at the minute, there's a lot of teams in contention that could finish top four. Obviously, you've got, I mean, Joe's going to love this, but Sheffield United are still up there at December,
obviously. Have a day off.
Obviously, not saying... I'm saying you're pushing it.
We are never going to get
You're still pushing it, so are Wolves, so are Spurs, so are Chelsea. Like,
City are leagues above them teams.
No, they are, but they're also very close on points. Like, they're only 6 points ahead of Chelsea. Like, they could easily drop to fourth. I think Leicester are going to stay second. I can't see them dropping.
I think we could see Pep leave if... I think if they were to finish somewhere like fourth or below, I think we could see Pep leave. I think he's never really... I think this is how you can compare it to Klopp. He's never really brought a team from from the bottom upwards. He's always inherited something which has got, you know, great foundations there already. And
I can't imagine he'll do it, but I'd love to see him go to a really, like, a much smaller club and just try and rebuild up and see if it, like... Because what else has he got left to do? He's been the manager of...
Join Man United in that case.
Hey, thanks, mate. He's obviously Man City manager now. He's been Barcelona manager, Bayern Munich manager. Like, he's had the biggest jobs in world football. What else is there for him to do, apart from being Spain manager, maybe?
All he's got left to do is manage Jesse Lingard, and we go to Man U.
Yeah. Man United, obviously, started off the season with that 4-0 hammering of Chelsea, where, to be honest, Chelsea were the better side on the day, but somehow they managed to score 4 goals. Adam knows it as well. From that point, they had a win at home against Leicester wedged in there, but they had defeats against Palace, West Ham, Newcastle, as well as draws with Wolves, Southampton, Arsenal, and then getting Liverpool's only draw of the season. But it's really been since November is when they've really kicked on. They've had a few draws in there as well, but also plenty of wins and plenty of goals. Rashford's really finally coming into his own, sometimes down the middle, but quite often from the left-hand side, which I think is his best position. And he's, I think, racked up about 10 goals now in the Premier League, which is a great return for him. They went into the season with a young British outlook, signing Danny James from Swansea, Wan-Bissaka from Palace, and, of course, Harry Maguire from Leicester for a world record transfer fee. James, I think's done really well considering where he was last season in the Championship. Wan-Bissaka, we all know his qualities defensively. I think he's done really well as well. Maguire's been a bit of a letdown, personally. I was expecting him to come in, you know, this big, he's a 6 foot, what is he, 6 foot four?
Yeah.
English leader, you know, played for England. You expect him to come in and sort of rally the defence, but I think he's not really done that. He's had a few good games, but also some off games. And you just, because I mean, there was a lot of talk about Maguire and Van Dijk at times last season, comparing the two. And obviously, I thought Van Dijk was leagues above Maguire, but I still thought Maguire was a world-class centre-back. But he's not really proven that he's world-class at the minute this season. United sit, at the time recording, sixth in the Premier League, 25 points, obviously. Just mentioned how tight it is up there. I think the way they play is best suited to when they play the big teams, because they can absorb pressure and then hit them with their devastating pace in attack. Often when they have to play the so-called smaller teams, they do struggle to create chances, and it's quite lethargic and a lot of backwards passing, and the runners in behind like James, Martial, Rashford, Lingard, they're not as good against the smaller teams because they don't have that space to move into. They don't have the ability to create the movement that they usually like to do.
And to their credit, United have got a very good defence, so against those bigger sides, they can afford to sit in. And when you got De Gea as well, as much as he might have had some, you know, cagey moments this season, he's still one of the best.
Yeah, for me, they are missing a Paul Pogba-esque creative player, but I don't think Paul Pogba is going to work out in the end at the club. I don't know what you think about that.
I don't know. I think he could work out really well, but I think we need to deploy him in a different way. I think since he's been injured this season, we've started playing a bit of a double pivot with McTominay and Fred. And I think it's got the best out of Fred, and McTominay, I think, personally, has been our player of the season, even despite all the goals that Rashford's got. You can see the massive increase in how great we are on the counter-attack with him in the team opposed to without. When we're without him, we concede a lot more goals. I think I saw a stat the other day. I think we've only, without him in the team, when he was out for six games, we drew or lost every one, and we hadn't lost a game in the last eight games he'd played with him in the team. Like, he does create a lot. He creates a lot, but also he breaks up a lot as well. Like, he doesn't do anything fancy or anything special, but what he does is the basics to an extremely good level, which I think is what we really need at the minute. And then Fred can just run up and down the pitch and do whatever he wants. So if we deployed Pogba a bit more attacking, like he used to play at Juventus, it'd allow him to be a bit more creative, which I think is what we'd need against smaller teams, like someone like Palace or against Watford, where we do struggle to create chances because they do sit so deep. Whereas when we play normally, we just run on the counter-attack against everyone.
Now, is that a bit, we might be looking into it too deep, but is it a bit of a message from Ole to Pogba that now that you're out, we're actually going to revert to a system which would fit you perfectly? Maybe it is. I might be looking into it too much, but I don't know if there could be something.
I think
there.
This is his last chance. I think that if this doesn't go right for Pogba, I think we'll see him go in the summer. I feel like Madrid need to bulk up their defence. I can see him probably going a lot. But I think he will just slot out where Jesse Lingard's been playing at centre attacking midfield. So
I think you can expect another Europa League finish for United. And what about for Newcastle?
Newcastle, at the start of the season, Owen Summer appointed Steve Bruce as their new manager from Sheffield Wednesday. It was quite a controversial move because Steve Bruce had only just joined Wednesday in like February of last year. They are 11th with six wins, four draws and seven losses, and they've scored 17 goals in the league, which is the third lowest. Only lower, I think, Watford, and it's either Southampton or Norwich, I think, have got lower goals than them.
Probably Southampton.
Oh no, it's neither of them. It's Crystal Palace.
Cheers, Jeff.
Their style of play, they play a lot in their own half, whether that is in their possession or other teams, normally in other teams' possession. They soak up pressure quite well with a well-organised back line and normally play, or at least recently have been playing with five at the back and then 5-4-1. At the start of the season, the lone striker was Joe Linton. I think it's their record club signing. Was it 40 million?
Yeah.
Well, he's not really performed. I think he's got one goal, if that. He's got one goal.
I think it was against Spurs in the season.
But they've gradually shifted towards Carroll as he's returned from injury, especially in the past like two or three games. They play quite a lot of long balls, and a worrying statistic is that a lot of their goals, I think at least over 50% of their goals have come from defenders or defensive style of players, which is a worrying thing for your attackers, especially when you've spent so much money primarily on your attack that they're not really producing. They're good at catching teams on the counter with St. Maximum's pace. You saw it against Man United quite a lot, and the likes of Sheffield United, where they might not have been enjoying the possession of the game, but the second they won possession back and could counter,
outball,
they were dangerous. Their top in goal involvement is Jonjo Shelvey with 5 this season, and he scored for the first time in his career 3 consecutive games. One of the more important goals or influential goals he scored was against City, which is quite a blinder of a goal. It was poor defending by City, but it took some skill to score from that far out, which pulled that back to 2-2. And they have had some impressive results. They've drawn against Man City, and they've beaten Man United at home.
Beat Sheffield United away from home as
well. Yeah, first team in since 2017 to put 2 past United at home. Win by 2 goals at home at Bramall Lane.
I think the issue though about Shelvey, he's been their best player in my opinion.
His
injury record as well.
He's currently injured at the moment.
That's exactly my point. I was just going to say that if he were to get injured again, which he has, and if he keeps getting injuries as he has done, where are they going to get the goals from?
Injuries.
Keep getting your defenders.
My players to sign is someone who can score goals, because players like Almiron, who has had one of the highest amount of shots on target without scoring this season, spends more time on the floor than he does actually trying to score goals. You've got St. Maximum, who has had a dodgy hamstring this entire season. At the start of the season, he missed a couple of games, and he's recently I think he's out until the new year with a hamstring injury, which I think they're going to really miss over this period. Carroll, he's always got injury concerns. So can you put your faith in him for an entire season? I wouldn't put it. Or then you can't just rely on, and I know that people are going to say, oh, Sheffield United rely on not just their forwards to score, but you can't just rely on you can't just rely on defenders and to score from set pieces or from around set pieces. You need other outlets, and I think if St. Maximum's not there, they haven't really got that at the moment.
So are you looking at a centre forward or more of a winger?
I didn't have anyone in mind. I was going to open it to the table.
I'll let you boys confirm.
Some of the names we've mentioned earlier. They've got Joel Linton, which is 40 million. I don't think Mike Ashley's going to really give Bruce lot of money to play with, and someone like Callum Grant or even someone else from that division is probably more they're going to be looking at, really, in the price range they're going to have to play
with. Bashuayi? What about him?
Someone like Bashuayi would be a good
shout. I don't think he'll be let go by Chelsea personally.
I think someone maybe like Jared Bowen as well. I think they need someone that's just going to help service Joel Linton. He's not the sort of player like Andy Carroll who will just hold up the ball and then let his teammates do it. He needs to be able to work around with the team.
Carroll's actually not been doing that this season. He might not have scored, but he's been assisting, and he's been much more of a... he hasn't.
No, I'm saying, no, I'm agreeing with you. I'm agreeing with your point.
He's looked reinvigorated, hasn't he? He's put himself about a lot more.
More of a team player. I think you mentioned it when we were watching him warm up at Bramall Lane. They were practicing a move where it could either involve St. Maximum crossing him in, or even just Carroll putting him in for, in that game it was St. Maximum who scored from a Carroll assist.
Yeah, and obviously in the game after as well, it was Carroll assist which Shelvey converted, which is usually the way around. But I think Bruce just knows what the strengths of his side are, which the defence, hence why he plays five at the back.
I reckon they'll finish around mid-table. Lower half of mid-table, I said 10th, 11th,
I'd probably say 12th.
I said around that.
Yeah, and somebody who's looking further down is Norwich. Now, they've got the goals in them, but they're shipping too many, aren't they?
Yeah, they've out of the 17 games played this season, they've won 3, they've drawn 3, but they've lost 11. Their form's been a bit up and down this season. They've had some really good performances. Like the first day of the season against Liverpool was really good, but again, it was a defeat. And that's been the problem with Newcastle. Daniel Farke's with Norwich, shall I say. Farke's been playing really good football at times, but it's just not really working out in front of goal all the time, and then maintaining those leads when they get it. They did have that point of the season where they had plays from their third team, and they had I think at one point they have 3 goalkeepers on the bench at one point, Nathan.
I think McGovern had to come in, didn't he? Third choice keeper.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a mess at times with injuries for them. So they have struggled a lot, and they have probably been the team that's been the most affected with injuries this season. But they are only... they are currently sat on 12 points, which is only 3 points from safety, as Villa, who are in 17th, they're on 15 as well as Southampton. So they could still get out of this battle. Like they've not been relegated yet. They usually play a 4-2-3-1, which is really good for helping them build up on the counter-attack a lot of the time. Obviously, their main man, Timo Pukki, has got 9 goals for them this season, and it's helped out a lot, as well as Cantwell, who's got 5 as well. But Tim Krul's been really good. Has been really good for them in goal. I think without Krul's influence, they'd have really struggled a lot. When Man United played them, he saved 2 penalties in the same game. As we know, he's an expert penalty saver from the World Cup when he was subbed on in the 118th minute for a shootout. But they do need a lot more defensive support. Someone I looked at for them would be Nicholas Stark from Hertha Berlin. He's a 24-year-old centre-back who can also play midfield if needed. But he's a really good tackler of the ball, and he's really good at getting the ball out into midfield. So he could really help out getting the ball to Tete and Tribal as well to start counter-attacks, which I think would be a really good idea for them. Obviously, right now, they've not got a strong enough defence to sit back and counter. But someone like him would help get the ball out a lot easier for them. I think there is a lot of good standout players in the team. Like Cantwell looks really, really good, as well as Timo Pukki standing out. I think Wendy has really impressed me a lot this season as well. Wendy's got 5 assists, Cantwell's got 4. I do think the problem is they just need to strengthen up it defensively.
The problem with your suggestion is, or any suggestion, is the fact that they have no money at all to spend. They have literally a shoestring budget, and they had to come together with a few loan deals which haven't worked out.
Dermich and
Patrick Roberts, who's not had a look in from City in attack, and you know, getting Amadou in late on, and centre defensive midfielder also slotted in at centre back at times, and it's really a problem for Norwich, is the fact that they just can't go out and literally spend any sort of money whatsoever.
They are the embodiment of what is going increasingly more worrying with football teams in football. Surprisingly,
football teams are in football.
Yeah, but in terms of like the financial situation, the richer teams are getting richer and spending more money. I mean, you get teams like your Norwich or your Huddersfield coming up from the Championship, and Norwich had a great season last season in the Championship. They were outstanding. Maybe a bit lucky closer to the last couple of games, but other than that, played really good football. They just can't compete with some of the bigger teams. And I know you say that about the teams of like even higher up teams like Sheffield United, Newcastle. You get to a stage where can you even compete with teams who are spending 150 million, who are spending more than your team have ever spent in like their history in just one transfer window?
Yeah. Well, I've actually got the hotly contested Sheffield United. They also came up with Norwich last year. And coming into this, they were written off as a league favourites to go back down, I'd say. I don't think it's...
Easily.
Yeah.
Bookies favourites to go down.
Exactly. And now you just wouldn't say it because they're sitting in fifth, is it sixth?
Seventh. Is it sixth? I think it's seventh.
They are seventh.
Seventh. Obviously yeah, very tight, as we've said before. And Wilder's stuck with his core group of players who he's been working with in the main from League One, really. Similar to sort of Bournemouth, what Howe did. And we all, well, Joe more so than us, but we all remember the point that they salvaged away at Bournemouth on the opening day, Billy Sharp's 88th minute equaliser. Obviously, that set the tone for what's become a really exciting season for the Blades. Issue is, for me, they've struggled getting chances on target. They're averaging around 2 a game, so they're creating a lot of chances, but we went to go and see it live. It's a player that I will speak about. It's McGoldrick, and one of his chances, you know, it's harsh. To just critique one moment, but he skied it, almost went out of the stadium. Not the biggest stadium anyway, but yeah, I'd say that Sheffield United are riding their luck slightly in that regard in terms of where they are. But, you know, when you've got such a well coached defence and a great keeper like Dean Henderson, who should be an established Premier League keeper, you know, that's what's going to help you out. But obviously they've taken points off Chelsea, Spurs, Arsenal and United, and they were unlucky not to against Liverpool as well. That's the thing with Sheffield United, they're competitive with most teams. It's just that clinical edge of nicking a goal or two,
not
to
just
get
Liverpool,
them the win.
Leicester as well, very unlucky. It was a Barnes blinder, which realistically separated the two teams on that day.
Yeah, so their formation, we all know, it's 5-3-2, and they've executed it to perfection, really. And going and seeing it live as well, it really opened your eyes to just how well they do cover each other, the players. So if it's Basham coming forward, he almost slots into like a right wing position, and you've got Norwood who might cover him at the back. Baldock's coming inside. It's so unpredictable. You just can't. And Joe saying it, Cheshire Cat-esque smile, as I'm stroking
I'm just laughing.
Sheffield United
people
ego.
People said it wouldn't work. That's the point I wanted to make.
That the mainstream media, even a few weeks into it, the season, were kind of writing them off and saying this is just, you know, classic British football. There's no real style. When
a lot of the pundits hadn't watched. Yeah. Let's be honest, hadn't watched Championship football, and they didn't know how these teams that came up actually played. So they just painted them with the brush of,
it's a fully British squad, fully England, Irish with one French player up front. Let's just say that they're just going to play long balls all day long.
Don't forget about your Bosnian Herzegovina centre midfielder.
Mate, he hasn't started yet. He's probably going to start on Saturday against Brighton, hopefully, because he's been playing decent recently when he's come on. Who would you sign? Who would you say?
So for me, I'd be looking definitely at a forward. I wanted to bring this debate, just keep it nice and brief, but there's been a lot made from particularly Adam and Joe about David McGoldrick. I think you can, in my opinion anyway, you can fully appreciate the work that he does. You can see the off-the-ball work that he does. I do think he needs to be contributing goals or assists. But, you know, you look at the game against Man U when he dragged Maguire out. It's the little things which people might not be, realising that do mean a lot to, you know, enable Fleck, Lundstrom, Moussa to get forward and get goals. But I'd be looking at Jarrod Bowen as well, said it earlier.
This boy's getting a lot of shouts today.
No, I just think he deserves, you know. And then I'd also look at fullback cover as well. Yeah. So Baldock and Ender Stevens have played pretty much every game. They provide great energy and service to the forwards, but they need some rest time, or they could, you know, suffer from burnout. So I'd be looking at Danny Da Costa of Frankfurt. I think bringing in a good quality European wing back would also freshen up that squad.
I think one of the things looks at is not just ability on the pitch. I think it's work rate and
the passion of the players.
Can
he get pissed at the railway?
But like players like Ravel Morrison, for example, who they've got from Man United.
From Lazio, but it's fair enough.
You're gonna say his work rate is woeful.
Yeah. Why do you think he's not been playing? He's literally like, you can't have. It's why it's been. Oh, what was it? Who is it from? He was at Sunderland. Jack Rodwell.
Yeah.
He's been rumoured to be signing for United, and a lot of United fans are going, why? Because one of the things Wilder values is work rate. If you've got the work rate, like he will put his faith in you sometimes, but someone like Rodwell doesn't really have that, and that would be my only concern. I personally agree with you. I think we need replacements for Baldock and Stevens if something bad was to happen, and possibly some centre-backs who can emulate what Basham and O'Connell do so well, which is getting forward and playing in position. Because Basham didn't start off as a centre-back, he started as a centre-mid at Sheffield United. And it does show, like against Norwich 2 weeks ago and against Villa. But that isn't easy to come by. Not all centre-backs are that comfortable on the ball. It's something which Harry Maguire has always been quite good at. He's quite comfortable on the ball. Maybe not to the level of like Basham and O'Connell in terms of from an attacking perspective, but I think we need one more centre back who can do that.
Yeah, and I think key player, just to round this little bit off, and Sheffield United, is Dean Henderson. I think as much as Moussa's come into his own recently, I think if you didn't have Dean Henderson, I just think about that draw away at Watford, some of the saves he pulled off in that 0-0 draw. It's those little points that, you know, really do make the difference. And I'd kind of leave it to you guys to decide whether it be Fleck, you know, Lundstrom, Moussa, or one
McGoldrick
of the defenders.
McGoldrick for me.
I mean, yeah, that McGoldrick is my favorite. I think it's, that's why I wanted to leave it Henderson and then everybody. So yeah, we're going to move on to the next team. Let's go.
Yeah, we're down to St Mary's with Southampton, who have had a pretty torrid time of it this year. They've pretty much played three at the back for most of the season. The formation style under Hasenhüttl hasn't really clicked the way you would have wanted to, and it really compounded itself with that 9-0 defeat at home against Leicester, the humiliating one where, you know, Perez and Vardy both got hat-tricks and they were just ripped apart, and it was really just shambolic on so many levels. But since then, Hasenhüttl has adopted a similar 4-4-2 formation that he saw success with at Red Bull Leipzig, and he's gone with that since the 23rd of November, really, which saw a 2-2 draw of Southampton with Arsenal. And then from that point on, he's picked up wins at home against Watford and Norwich. Since then, he's had a couple of defeats against Newcastle and West Ham, but on the whole, I think the change has improved the team so much more. I don't think they were good enough with three at the back, and the four at the back gives them more solidity. You've got a mix. Aurelio Romeo has been a mainstay in their teams, come out of the team now. You've got a difference of Ward-Prowse, Højbjerg. It's just a different dynamic, and there is some energy there, and some good passing to break free from the counter, and then usually two wingers. And then up front, they go with Danny Ings and either Obafemi or Long. Them two are more like the McGoldrick types that will make the runs, create the space, do the hard graft, and Ings has become a huge source of goals for the team. And he's got 9 already this season. Without Ings, Southampton would be struggling. Well, they are struggling.
I think they'd be dead and gone.
They would be. They definitely would be. And his goals are so vital for them at the minute. I think they've only had 18 in 17 games. And yeah, you take his goals out of the team and they are finished. So I think areas for improvement, you probably would say, once again, defence is a key theme in this discussion. Probably another midfielder, a more defensive destroyer type that will get up and down the pitch.
Well, I always thought Mario Lemina was great for them. He obviously doesn't fit into Hasenhüttl's plans. I think he's gone out on loan to Galatasaray. I'm not sure if it's permanent. I think it's on loan. But I've always been impressed by him at Marseille and Juventus, and thought that he deserved a chance under the new coach. But it might be an attitude problem. It could just be he doesn't fancy him, you know. But if he comes back into the fold, that could be a player where they don't have to spend. And the issue with Southampton, I think, is that they've had this business model where they can keep churning through players, selling them on, and they'll make do. You know, they might drop a place or two places. I think they've sold that many now, which their squad, there's still a couple of standout players, you know, Ings, Redmond, Ward-Prowse, Cedric, I think, is a very good player as well, and the young Jan Valerie as well. But they've gone through that many players that now they are left with the bare bones, and you've still got some players that aren't good enough. I think Yoshida, I don't think Jack Stevens, we said about 4 weeks ago that he's just that level in between Championship and Premier League. So they need some investment big time. So let's move on from Southampton.
To Spurs.
Yeah, let's go.
Nicest stadium in the Premier League.
They're fifth in the league with 7 wins, 5 draws and 5 losses. They've scored 32 goals and conceded 24, so it's not great from a defensive standpoint. A lot of them goals have come late on, especially recently. Against West Ham and Bournemouth, they conceded twice late on. Pochettino was in charge for the first half of this season so far, until a 1-1 draw against Sheffield United saw him lose his position of, was it 5 years? I think it was 5 years at Tottenham.
Yeah.
So they bought in Mourinho literally, practically, was it the day after?
No, I think it was the same day. A couple of hours after.
Style of play-wise, under Poch, Spurs played quite a narrow style of football with quite attacking through the middle, with possession football, short passes and through balls. Nearer the end of his time, he played a 4-2-3-1. And the narrow style of football meant they often were susceptible on the wings, as can be seen against, I said Sheffield United, but it's just because that was the most prominent Tottenham.
Would
poor.
Be.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be. Mourinho has kept the 4-2-3-1, but has started to play a wider style of football. Certain players at Tottenham have also had a resurgence, including Dele Alli is one of the more obvious ones, but Kane has also suddenly got back into actually scoring. he's dropping slightly deeper, and he's creating chances for others with his passing ability. Shame we didn't see about the 2018 World Cup, but also he's back with his lethal finishing, which has been a bit off recently. Again, against Sheffield United, I think he's been riddled with illness this season. He's been out for, I don't think it's injury, I think it is literally just an illness. But for me, the key player is Son. Although Kane's got 11 goal involvement, 9 goals and 2 assists, Son has got 5 goals and 7 assists, which is quite a relatively high number of goals for a winger in the Premier League this season. He's been persistent the entire season in the games he's played. I think he missed the first two due to a red card in the last game of last season. And he's also had a red card against Everton. Did that get rescinded or not?
Yeah, it did.
He has had a goal involvement in 9 of the games he's played this season. And Tottenham have only won once when he hasn't provided any goal involvement directly. So an assist or a goal, not a pre-assist as I've coined. One player I would sign is maybe, I know Eriksen is playing on the bench, is on the bench a lot recently, and it's quite clear that he wants to probably leave the club. So I would think about maybe with the money you get for him, buying a replacement for him, for someone who can come off the bench. I would have said Eric Dier, but I feel like Mourinho actually enjoys having Eric Dier. I know he wanted to sign him when he was at Man United,
yeah,
didn't he?
Yeah, £50 million bid rumoured.
I've said they'll probably finish fourth. I think they'll beat out Chelsea. I just don't think Chelsea are different gravy at the moment.
I think I'm going to go fifth. I think them and Chelsea will be scrapping for fourth place. And obviously, as we're recording this, Chelsea take on Spurs on Sunday as well. So that'll be quite interesting.
Nightmare before Christmas, isn't
it? Oh, wonderful. I'd go fifth and right to the bottom of the end of the table, and it's Watford.
Well, they have been absolutely terrible this season, haven't they? It caused Kiko Sanchez Flores to lose his job after 3 months after being dead bottom. They've only won one game this season, which was away at Norwich. They've played a few different formations this season. They've tried a 5-3-2 with really good fullbacks, but with Pearson, they've reverted back to his typical 4-2-3-1. Obviously, he's only played one game with the winners against Liverpool, so not really a good judge of character. So we'll see in the next few weeks how he kicks on, especially with this big one of games at Christmas. Their only good player this season for me has been Ben Foster. I know it's hard to say they could be doing any worse, but without him, I think they'd have conceded a lot more goals. I think that his influence in the team is really good. I think he is still England national team quality, obviously, if he hadn't retired. But I do think there is a lot of issues and a lot of things they need to improve and replace. They need to get a better centre-back, in my opinion. They need to really strengthen up their defence. They need to get a better striker as well. Ishmael Assar's not really became the player that they expected he was going to be after the big summer transfer. They need a real leader in their defence. Like, they need someone like a Gary Cahill to come in, but obviously there's not many of them on the market anymore, especially for cheap. But I could see a lot of Pearson's old boys coming in. I could see someone like a Mark Albrighton coming in. Great cross of the ball, could try and help get a different style of approach as well for them this season. Because the wingers they've got haven't been in amazing form. Obviously, their main named player would be Gerard Deulofeu, who this season's got 2 goals and 2 assists. But his form is so dreadful, and he can be an amazing player on his day, but his day is probably once a season. So I can't see much more from him coming for the rest of the year, unfortunately. Which is obviously a massive shame, because he's such a good talent when he's playing well.
Yeah, I'm going to take West Ham. Bit of an up and down season, really. I think they're massively underperforming. Now, most recent game, they beat Southampton away from home. Positive victory, but not the vintage football that West Ham fans are demanding. I think it's a difficult one with West Ham, because part of it is that they're quite entitled fans, similar to Arsenal fans. They want this and they want that. And, you know, the ambitions of the club to go and get that stadium those years back, 60,000 capacity, you should be striving for more. They were promised European football, and they haven't really come close for years now since Payet was there. They brought in Haller, Fornals, and Roberto, Nathan's best mate. And only really Haller has contributed that much. He's got 5 goals in the Premier League. He still hasn't been the Haller we associate with last year's Frankfurt. That is obviously due to the lack of a front two at West Ham, which we've all pointed out and been saying. And that's what they reverted to against Southampton. They put Antonio up top with him, and that seemed to, you know, bring the best out of him. Fornals, real disappointment so far. Obviously, they're missing the likes of Lanzini as well, but West Ham, I compare them quite similarly to Everton. They're one of the teams that you expect to see in the top half. You know, when you think of the Moyes era for Everton, kind of associate West Ham and Everton to be, you know, runners up behind the top six. And with West Ham, they've brought in, they spent a lot of money previous seasons. Felipe Anderson, Yarmolenko, obviously got Fredericks on a free. That was a good signing. But I think they're massively missing Fabianski. And, you know, they've got a lot of players on the wage bill that aren't pulling their weight. I think of Jack Wilshere. You know, he's not even been able to get any fitness. And that means that you've still got Mark Noble at the base of your midfield getting a game every week. Declan Rice hasn't lived up to the hype which he once had last year. I don't think that he's adding a great deal. He's doing a basic screening job, which the likes of Eric Dier can do as well. So not really adding much, which West Ham desperately need. I'd probably say the best player for them this season would have to be, and this is a hot take, but I think Mikel Antonio.
I agree.
Had very limited minutes, and only in the last few weeks has he come in out of desperation, it seems, from Pellegrini. But he needed to take Haller out of that side and needed a different style leading the line, and that's what Antonio's brought. He can stretch the defence, not technically great, but he is a workhorse. And for West Ham, I could see them finishing maybe 14th, and I think that there could be a managerial change at that club anytime soon. And if I had to sign somebody, give me a position, I'll try and name it, because it's pretty much every position is needed, barring probably left back, and then when Fabianski comes back, goalkeeper. Centre backs haven't been good enough. Diop hasn't replicated his form of last year, so I'd be looking there. I wouldn't be able to give you any specific names because there's just that many where it's an issue. I mean, haven't even touched upon defensive midfield. So, yeah, I think it's quite bleak for West Ham. Yeah, they just kind of down tools too easy, and that's a major issue if your team aren't backing you. But the team who are backing the manager, they've revitalised is Wolves.
Yeah, Wolves, their start to the season. Well, everyone before the start of the season picked out a few teams they thought could battle for top six places. Wolves was one of those teams on people's lips, and they started off with three draws, and draws have really been a big theme for them this year. They've had the most in the league, 9 draws after 17 games. 5 wins, 3 defeats, 24 goals for and 21 against. So it's a mixed bag, really, but I think it's been far more positive than negative for the club. And for me, a lot of their games are very close. They're never blown away by teams. I think the 5-2 defeat against Chelsea is probably their heaviest they've probably suffered in the last two seasons. They have a strong structure which has not wavered at all in the 3 years, including the championship season under Nuno Espirito Santo. It's three at the back, the two wing backs, Doherty on the one side, and you've got Johnny on the left side, and these two are the biggest threats for the team. A midfield of Moutinho and Neves. Sometimes as a two, sometimes as a three. It depends whether he plays with a wingers or just two strikers. The big player has been Jimenez again for me. He's got 6 goals. It's not the most impressive, but the work he does for the team out of possession goes unnoticed at times. You'd want more from Diego Jota. He's finally coming into a little bit of form, but a player of that quality, you'd expect more. And Adama Traore as well has been a standout. I think he's really improved upon his game. He's not just a dribble merchant with pace anymore. He's adding another dynamic with an end ball and some delivery and some goals. What I would do if I was Wolves manager is I would look to bring in about 2 or 3 new players, because I think their squad depth is just not there at the minute. And if they got an injury to say, Patricio, for example, or they got an injury to Neves or Jimenez, it's going to hamper their season very, very big, very massively. Yeah, very big.
Yeah, and
no, but you know what I mean.
They've
just got the 11 on the team, and then the bench is not really doing much for them week in, week out. So they just need more numbers, quality numbers as well.
And getting into the last 32 of Europa as well, they'll need to get reinforcements in. some of the players, younger players like Kilman, have come in those games. But when you come up against stronger sides, as I'm sure they might do if they do progress even further than the 32, that's, like you say, Nathan, it's essential that they do get some signings through the door in January. So, yeah, Happy New Year to you guys. Really hope you enjoyed this back-to-back episode. And because I have, I mean, we've been recording for a long time, about two hours. Really looking forward to 2020 to see what the year brings for the drop ball, to have these goons here recording as well. But yeah, thank happy you. New Year to
happy
you guys.
New Year, everyone.
Enjoy. See you later.
It is now. It's four.